Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to... Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Crack Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. If it's a Monday, you know what we're doing on this show. Chatting all things ATP Challenger Tour with hosts Damian Kust and Jakub Bobro. This week, they discuss why the current ATP ranking system may prevent two of the most successful players on the Challenger Tour in 2021, Talon Griekspoor, Benjamin Bonzi, from progressing up a level. They also discuss the strange phenomenon of qualifying draws lacking players. They discuss Constant Lestienne's first big week in a while, and so much more. It is a fantastic conversation that I know all of you listeners are going to enjoy. Of course, before we get to it, just want to quickly remind all of you, if you're looking for a recap on all things Indian Wells, hop on over to our Mini Break podcast feed. I chatted not only about Sunday's finals, but Saturday's semifinals as well. We were joined by Chris Otto on Saturday on the Mini Break podcast to discuss some of the broader topics right now on the ATP Tour. A really fun conversation about who the most improved player in 2021 might be, given Cam Norrie's victory at Indian Wells. He may have just clinched that title, but if you're interested in that sort of content, again, hop on over to our Mini Break podcast feed on the Cracked Interviews podcast. We've had some fantastic guests of late, Lau Valverde, Jim Doherty, Ben Shelton, now Cannon Kingsley here on Monday to discuss some of his success of late on the Futures Circuit. If you're interested in listening to any of those interviews, you can find them all on our Cracked Rackets website. You can also find them on the Cracked Interviews podcast feed wherever you listen to your podcasts. But of course, you didn't come here to hear plugs. You came here to listen about all things happening on the ATP Challenger Tour. So with that said, let's get to it. Another ATP Challenger recap episode with host Damian Kust and Jakub Bobro.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the next episode of the Challenger Tour podcast. I am once again joined by my friend Jakub. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's another one of these early records that we do sometimes. So that's always fun to do. But it was an interesting week in tennis. And the challengers here, for sure. You got a point. I didn't get a yep. point, unfortunately. Should we start with where you got a point, Santiago?
Sure, I'll just say that it's 12 to 10 right now, if anyone wants to still be keeping track. I guess 2 points is, you know, it's not a big gap. You can definitely make up for that. I mean, yeah, I can.
Gap that you can make up in a week, most weeks, mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
So in Santiago, Sebastian Baez, as he predicted, he didn't win last week for me, he won this week for you. Beat Felipe Meligeni Rodriguez Alves 3-6, 7-6, 6-1. That second set, I thought that he was going to lose it. He was looking quite rough there in the tiebreaker. He won at 8-6. His fourth challenger title in his career. All of them have been this year. He moved up to number 124, I believe, in the live rankings here. Beat Alvarez, Fikovic, Juan Manuel Cerundolo, Marcelo Tomás Barrios Vera. It was a quite impressive run. What did you think of Baez this week?
I think the match against Cerundolo is the one to remember. I was super impressed with his point construction in this one, just how he was able to easily dominate off the ground. But like it feels very weird to say that about Baez, but I feel like he was developing some sort of a mental block for the finals. like his previous two performances against Agamenone in Kyiv and then last week against Varillas in Santiago were kind of off, and in both he had big leads in sets that he threw away, and it almost happened here again. At 4-4 in the second, he was 40 love up on return, I think, yes, and then he had 40 love up on serve to actually level, and he still allowed Marigani to get into a tiebreak, then almost blew a 5-1 lead in the tiebreaker. Honestly, he just had to work out his mental issues. I feel like the match was mostly on his racket, though, and definitely it was definitely the case in the third. A crazy stat that I read about Baez, well, read, just, you know, just found out through his records, that this year he participated in 11 challengers and in 7 he reached the finals. The crazy part is also that if he's not reaching the finals, he's not even getting past round 2, I think. Like whenever he got past round 2, he also went to the championship match at least. And of very, very not meaningful stats, he's 22-2 in Chile this year.
Wow. It's almost similar with Talon Griekspoor, who has the same stat, I believe. He's either winning the title or he's not making it out of the second round. It's been very similar. I mean, and we'll get to Griekspoor, of course, later. Baez is now the number 3 in the challenger. He overtook Echeverri. I was very impressed with him this week. I was also very impressed with Meligeni Rodriguez Alves, who certainly had a tough road as well. Past Crawford, Londero, Gerald Meltzer, and Puccinelli de Almeida. And he actually moved up to his new career high ranking in number 187, Meligeni. So he's somebody to watch out for as we head down the stretch here, for sure. Somebody that we should also mention, Puccinelli de Almeida. I mean, he's still so young, only 20. Another very nice run from him this week. He beat Coaco, Kiker, Francisco Cerundo. Do you have any thoughts on Meligeni Rodriguez Alves or Puccinelli de Almeida?
Sure. I mean, Meligeni Alves I wasn't too impressed with him this year compared to 2020, for sure. But as we mentioned multiple times before, the South American challenger stretch is so long, and people just can get such good rankings here if you keep playing well until the end of November. Then you're gonna get so many opportunities, and then Meligeni Alves and Puccinelli de Almeida are definitely both players that can take advantage of that. I loved Puccinelli de Almeida's win over Francisco Cerundolo, not only because Cerundolo was your pick to win the title, but it was also the second time that he defeated him in 3 weeks. Definitely a completely different look of the match than it was 3 weeks ago. What would it be? Not Santiago, but I can't remember. All these South American events are definitely mixing up for me. Like Lima, or maybe Lima was Lima, I think, yes. And there, Puccinelli de Almeida played like completely not what he's used to. He was super aggressive, and then this one was much more toned down. But that was a fantastic week for him. That 6-1, 6-1 win over Enzo Cuoco as well in the first round. Cuoco was so disappointed, I guess, that he decided to play the qualies this week. Just sign up late, and I guess that might actually turned out to be a good idea, looking at how he played.
I was also quite impressed with Gerald Meltzer this week, who made the quarterfinals. He's slowly trying to rebuild his ranking. He's now at number 421, I believe. I have him here on Resultina. It was two very good wins over Jari, and then over Tirantes, 6-2, 6-6 love. And then he had a very close match with Meligeni Rodriguez Alves. Did you get to see any of Meltzer this week?
Yeah, I watched the one against Tirantad and then sort of watched the one against Marigani. When I say sort of, I mean, oftentimes I just have the stream on, but, you know, I am actually watching something else and, you know, I just see bits. Super impressive week. Second time in a row also that he beats Tirantad. And he, for whatever reason, he was just able to once again put him in sort of a backhand jail, I would say. How is it possible that pretty much no one else on this challenger, South American challenger tour, can do it to Tirantad, and Meltzer has done it so effectively twice? I have no idea. I guess we should also say that Juan Manuel Serundolo was yet again a match away from the top 100, but was stopped by Baez in this high quality quarterfinal.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I really enjoyed this tournament overall. I really enjoyed the field. Of course, next week it's a bit diluted because we have two tournaments in South America, so they sort of split a little bit. But although one of them is quite a bit stronger than the other one.
Yeah, it's so much stronger.
But yeah, do we have anything else we want to mention from Santiago?
No, probably not. I think we can get to you back to Europe.
Yes, let's move on to Napoli. There was the other title winner that I've already mentioned. Talon Griekspoor, as the fifth seed, beat Alexander Richard 6-3, 6-2 in the final. Absolutely unbelievable. We both thought that he would sort of run out of gas at this point, going three in a row. But yeah, third title in a row. It's his sixth title this year. He has equaled up Benjamin Bonzi, his eighth challenger title overall. Breaks into the top 100 by a mile. He's now number 89, I believe. Moved up 29 spots. He beat Rola, Alvaro Lopez San Martin, Manuel Guinat, and Flavio Coboli before the final. And once again, I mean, it wasn't even close in the final, similar to his match against Pellegrino. Yeah, what did you think of Griekspoor?
Yeah, this is pretty crazy that we've got two players tying the all-time record for most challenger titles in a single season. In Szczecin, I was talking to a tennis fan who said, was just mentioning Facundo Bagnis to me when he tied that record in 2016, and he was saying things like, "Oh, that was so incredible," and he fully expected Bagnis to, you know, start breaking through to the main tour. And I remember saying that maybe Benjamin Bonzi can do it. And here, a month later, we've got two different people tying it. I guess a general conclusion that could be taken from this is that it's at least in part due to the frozen rankings, because it's likely that both Griekspoor and Bonzi would stop playing challengers a bit earlier if it wasn't the case. So you know, I guess it's just a sort of thoughts that you can have looking at it. But obviously we didn't expect it, because how can you win 15 matches in 20 days? Like at the latter part of the run, you pretty much have to be just running on adrenaline. But Griekspoor's done it, and he was able to get a lot of free points thanks to his serve and forehand this week, which obviously helped. Lost just one set, and actually in the decider against Guinard, he was looking kind of gassed, and then I expected Coboli to take advantage. He didn't. Richard honestly played a good match in the finals to me. Griekspoor was just absolutely unstoppable. Alexander Richard is. They're so unlucky. He played fantastic tennis these past 3 weeks. Naples, Murcia, and the second event in Naples, and just ran into Griekspoor every time. This time, at least, they were in the opposite house of the draw, so he was able to grab a final. But in Murcia and the first event in Naples, he lost to him in the second round.
Yeah, I should also mention, I looked at the I looked at the schedule of Griekspoor and Bonzi. Griekspoor is scheduled to play another challenger in Tenerife, whereas yeah. Bonzi right now is not. He's scheduled to play only ATP events. So Griekspoor will have a chance to take the title for his own with seven challenger titles in a season. Maybe Bonzi plays Bratislava or Helsinki or something like that. I don't know. Those schedules aren't out yet, but it's looking unlikely that he would go back to the challengers. But yeah, Greeks were just incredible. And Richard, as you said, also a very strong week. He beat Giannou in qualifying, which is already a pretty tough match. And you're not even in the main draw.
He qualified for this. I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he who's been a kind of a double specialist for this. Mm-hmm. Then Giannou in the final qualifying round, then Clark, Hanfman, Moroni, Agamenone, and then lost to Greekspor, unfortunately. But he makes his new career high ranking, number 264. So very impressive week from both, for sure.
Yeah, super dessert from Richard, too. I think like the past few months have been, he's been overperforming his, you know, the expectations completely. Also, it's worth to mention the quarters against Moroni, where he was down 0-6, 1-5.
That was crazy.
Somehow produced the comeback. I mean, honestly, he just raised his level. I don't even feel like Moroni choked it. He just entered this god mode that took him all the way to the finals, honestly, because then in the semis, it was another perfect performance as well.
Yeah, it ruined my ticket for a bit. Actually, I was out during that match, but I remember like sort of monitoring it because I had a bet on it, and I was like, what the hell is going on here? And Richard somehow won it. But yeah, it was also a big week for the two semifinalists, Koboli and Agamenone, who are still, I mean, they're at different points in their career, obviously with Koboli being so much younger than Agamenone. But to sort of try to keep getting consistency here, it's quite impressive from both of them. I mean, Agamemnon has been really, after sort of struggling to make the switch from ITFs to challengers, he's really taken to it like a duck to water here. Just beating Gaston in the first round, then Borg, then Zapata Miralles, 6-3, 6-love. And of course, lost to Richard there. But it will be nice seeing these two.
Yeah.
Regularly. Also, just to mention our picks, you had Molchan who withdrew before the tournament started, and I had Coria who lost round two to Guinard, which I was not expecting in the slightest. That was 66-2. Anything else from Napoli?
No, probably not. I was just going to check. But okay, never mind. I was just wondering how many matches is it already for Franco Agamenone this year, but the site just keeps doing something weird to me.
So right now he's 80-22.
Oh, 80. Year. Okay.
80 match wins for Franco Agamenone.
Pretty crazy. Yeah. I think Chris O'Connell had more in like 2019, in recent memory, but anyhow, it's obviously, completely stupid. But he, I mean, at least he's reaped the rewards. Like, it's not like he won 80 matches and he's, I don't know, the number 400. He's actually going to play Australian Open qualifying. So, yeah fantastic, yeah, fantastic story, really. Yeah.
To make the big bucks. Let's go to Alicante, where Constant Lestien beat Hugo Grenier 6-4, 6-3 in the final. It's his third challenger title, first one since August 2019 in Portoroz. He moved up 50 spots to number 208. He beat Bonagoyo, Fernando Vedasco in a pretty dramatic match, it seemed. 7-5 in the third there. Lucas Middle and Joao Sousa. So not the toughest road. We should also probably mention that Lestien has been convicted of match fixing and has served a ban for betting on over 200 matches. Hopefully we'll see less of that from him over the time.
Well, that's not is that actually match fixing, just in terms of the term?
I believe the term is match fixing,
right?
I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure how many of the matches were his.
Okay, so some were his.
But yeah, because I remember when Ivo Klets got done for match fixing,
mm-hmm.
It was called match fixing even though he wasn't betting on his own match.
Uh-huh, okay.
But yeah, then we had Hugo Grenier there who reached the final. He breaks into the top 200 for the first time. And he actually seemed to have quite a bit of a tougher road there. Beat Nava, Feliciano Lopez, Nuno Borges, Oscar Ote. But it was Lestien to take the title. Yeah, what did you think of Lostien, Grenier, Alicante this week?
Alicante is a very nice place. Someone asked me on Twitter when have I last seen Lostien playing that well? And I honestly replied, maybe never. I mean, it's probably recency bias, but he was absolutely stunning this week. Probably after since that winning that thriller against Verdasco, loved him against Souza, which I definitely didn't expect that win. It seemed to me like João Souza will be very competitive on the Challenger Tour. Like in the semis, I was definitely looking at him as the contender to make the finals. He didn't. I loved Lestien's forehand this week. Like against Grenier, he's such a weird player because he pretty much counter punches until an opportunity presents itself to hit with the forehand. And I think Grenier was like a pretty decent favorite in the final, right? He's got a more, you know, a bigger game, but Lestien got into so many return games as well. Obviously, it's his first title in 3 years. The last two seasons were absolutely forgettable for him. So cool to see him do well again. I think he can also make Australian Open qualifying on the back of that run, or at least if he gets one or two more decent results. For Grenier, it's his first final this year. I think you've picked Grenier a few times this year, right? So
yeah, I definitely picked him once, and he actually did okay. I think he made like the quarterfinals then.
I always was sort of doubting that peak. I remember whenever he went for Grenier, so cool to see him do well as well. He has the game to be a much more successful in challengers than he is, for sure. I was definitely impressed with Oscar Otte until the semis. He was sort of just pulling everyone apart, and I remember thinking, why haven't I picked him? But I think he also had some sort of physical issue in the semis. Took a timeout. You couldn't really say, from the stream, it was hard to say what was it. I think someone on Twitter suggested that was his wrist, but anyhow, it looked like he wasn't exactly 100%. Still gave a great effort to even take the match to the decider.
We should probably mention our pick. Our pick was Quentin Alice from both of us. First round to Frederic Ferreira Silva. It just shows you, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I think we both had a tough time picking somebody, because this field, it looked very prone to falling apart, and we didn't really know who would emerge. There weren't really those names. I wouldn't have picked Lestien in a million years.
Alice, wow. I can't remember the details right now because it was like on Monday, but Alice had so many leads in that Ferreira Silva match. I mean, this has been a theme in Quentin Alice's career, I think. So maybe it's not that surprising, but he really seemed like a decent pick. And as you said, we both struggled here. And midway through the week, I was like, why have I struggled? Oscar Otte is there. What have you done? But in the end, I have nothing to regret. So,
yeah, I remember feeling like I wanted to see Oscar Otte play before I picked him, since the US Open has struggled physically towards the end. I also wanted to mention, we already mentioned João Sousa, but the semifinal was actually his best result of the year so far, which is kind of weird to think about. He's had a rough time of it. He's barely in the top 200 now at this point. I think he's like number 182 in the rankings. He beat Viola, he beat Balaji, and then Ferreira Silva, which isn't the toughest road again, but maybe it's a confidence boosting result here. And then is Yevseyev, who made the quarterfinals as a qualifier. He beat Pura Vraja, a double specialist in the first qualifying round, then Daniel Rincon, and then Dmitry Popko, and Denis Istomin. So quite an impressive run, especially the Popko win, I guess, at least from him. We should also mention that we talked about the doubles there, where we had
the elephant in the room,
where they, yes, David Marrero and Drew Van Mulier. And we talked about the possibility because they play Popko, Yevseyev, who have, especially Popko has had some history And they actually retired Popkoyevsev 6-1 2 love. So so that means that Marrero and Druvamulia get 15 points in the doubles rankings. So Druvamulia is now a ranked doubles player, number 1,298, because of that retirement from Popkoyevsev. So we can only theorize on why, I guess, they decided to retire.
Yes and no.
This guy clearly doesn't belong amongst the 1,300 best players in doubles in the world.
Oh, definitely not. And
it's tough to see when you see so many people trying to break through for somebody to just, you know, get a handout like this. And he gets to keep this ranking for at least a year. He gets to enter tournaments with it. So
yeah, he also has a elite doubles partner, obviously not elite anymore, but this is a guy who played the ATP finals in what was it, 2013 with Verdasco, which is absolutely crazy. Also, Marrero has a match fixing history, sort of. He was investigated twice openly, but never actually, at least for all I could find, never actually penalized. But can we theorize on Popko? I think we probably can theorize here, and probably even maybe say that, you know, when Dmitry Popko retires 1-6-0-2 down, and just he just randomly starts feeling dizzy, you know, starts saying, he literally said, "I feel dizzy," and then went off the court. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't trust him after all these UTRs. I don't want to mix EFCAF into this. You know, he could have been oblivious. The same with Marrero and Mulia. Like, Marrero and Mulia are definitely exposing the wildcard system. Like,
very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when people on Tennis Twitter complain about Petros Tsitsipas, imagine if they only knew about this. Like,
Mulia? Yeah. I mean, it probably isn't so, you know, so just so popular, but guys like Mulia, that Richard Zussman guy, you remember him playing in Kyiv? Yeah. I think he even won a match on the ITF tour this week. But just, you know, the players who Mulia was 0-36 before this week, in both singles and doubles. And even though he played with Marrero, who actually is still playing pretty fine doubles tennis, and he just literally couldn't win a match, yet still keeps getting wild cards all around the world. It's not, I honestly believe that what's it called right now, International Tennis Integrity Association, should not only investigate the players, but the tournaments. When someone gives a wild card to Druvamulia, questions should be asked. maybe right now, maybe not. I mean, he got 15 doubles points. Maybe right now it's on merit, actually.
I mean, he's definitely going to get into some futures doubles with this ranking.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Over the next year, which is, upsetting. Because, I mean, I've seen so many people that I know from, earlier, that go in every single week. They play, you know, Antalya futures qualifying. They need to win three matches to get into the main draw, and then try and get to the quarterfinals or semifinals to get points. And it's just such an incredible grind to try and get a ranking at all. So it's quite frustrating to then see somebody just sort of, in a way, buy it, essentially. Maybe he didn't buy the match, but he certainly bought the wild card.
Yeah, so. In singles to get a point, I think you need to win a round in an ITF, right? So for most players, you have to win three matches in the qualifying to even get a chance. And in doubles, I think, I can't remember if it's like a quarter on the ITF tour. I can't remember.
I think so. I think that once you win, let me check this.
Yeah, I think I can't remember.
So on a 15K in singles, you need to win the first round to get a point. Doubles, you need to actually make the semifinals.
The semis, I remember it was like, you know, you needed to do more in doubles. So he got 15 ITF semifinals from that Popka retirement, you could say.
Yeah, I mean, it's 4 points for the semifinals.
Ah, four points. Okay, no, sorry. Okay, it's not that extreme.
The point stands where he. Yeah, it's frustrating with stuff like this, but let's move on to match of the week, upset of the week. Sure. Which one should we start with?
Maybe upset, because I just closed down everything and I can't remember what my upset, yeah. My match of the week was.
Well, I'm going to go for my upset of the week. It was quite clear. I believe it's also what the bookies had as the biggest upset, and it's Manuel Guinart over Federico Coria in the second round. Of Napoli, 6-2, 6-2. I was not expecting this at all. I had this lovely image of Coria coming back from the hard courts, back to clay. He was going to love it. He was going to do great. He beat Anna Boldi in the first round, and then all of a sudden just gets taken to the cleaners by Manuel Guinart, who was playing very well. As you said, took Greek score as well to a deciding set. But yeah, I was very surprised. I was very surprised by the result, by the scoreline. Yeah, what's yours?
Yeah, I guess I'm gonna have to go with this one as well. As you said, it was the best pick according to the bookies as well. I honestly wasn't that much surprised by the result, but the extent of the loss definitely makes it just absurdly huge. Guinart had some great moments earlier in the season, but the past few months were just very forgettable. So to see him play this well again was definitely quite shocking. Yeah, and as for the match of the week, I think I'm going to go with Richard Moroni. Just the watching the comeback from 0-6, 1-5 down. You know, all the time saying no, he cannot, and then Richard keeping, you know, that domination for the third set, just ripping apart Moroni. Richard's forehand is a crazy shot. Actually, someone made a comparison to me that Richard sort of plays like Griekspor, and it was earlier in the week, not when they played in the finals, and I mean I can see it. I can see why, and I think it's mostly based on the forehand.
Yeah, my match of the week is Felipe Melgini Rodriguez Alves over Gerald Metzler, 6-3, 5-7, 7-5. It was very enjoyable clay court tennis. Certainly, don't watch this if you're if grunting bothers you a lot. I'm fine with it personally, but these guys got very loud, especially towards the end. But yeah, at some points there was some nice variety as well thrown into it, but mostly it was just a very interesting clay court battle, the sort of thing that I enjoy. So yeah, and I believe that was the quarterfinal in Santiago there. Yes. Anyway, should we go on to the previews of next week?
Yep.
So let's start in Europe and then we'll move on to South America. We have a challenger 80 in Losing. That's what I'm going to go with here. Yeah. Not quite sure the pronunciation. The J at the end sort of messes me up a bit. But yeah, Losing in Croatia, where Marco Cecchinato is the top seed. Quite a nice section. Well, that nice opening match. Then he has Guinart or Sedarusic, which could be quite tricky. But I feel like then that small section there with the other seed is Matthias Borg, Daniel Petrovic there, Aldin Sedkic, and Antony Genov, who is a Bulgarian wild card, coming into here 19, very low ranking. So that's kind of interesting to see, surprising a bit. So Cecchinato should probably make it through there, depending on how he plays against Guinart or Sedarusic. Then the next section, we have Andrei Martin as the high seed. He said he plays a wild card, Milik Poliachak, who's 17. So that should be interesting. Then he faces a qualifier, because there's two qualifiers playing each other in the second round. Fifth seed Blažerola in the section plays a qualifier, and then Manfatic plays a qualifier. So all the qualifiers are in the second quarter there. Then we have Nikola Milojevic, the fourth seed. He plays Carlos Jimeno Valero, who should be interesting to see what sort of form he comes into here. Winner of that plays either Ergi Kirkin or Raul Brancaccio. Then we have sixth seed Alessandro Giannesi playing Robin Haase. And then a winner of a very interesting match, I think, between Duja Ajduković and Franco Agamenone. I'm quite excited for that one. Looking forward to it. Then we have second seed Carlos Taberner playing Javier Barranco Cosano. The winner of that faces Blancano or Giano. And then seventh seed Jake Clark plays Andrea Naboldi and faces the winner of Forete Cornea. So a lot of interesting names. It's kind of a weaker field. I feel like most guys who play the hard courts are either taking a break or they're trying their luck in qualifying for the ATP tournaments this week, because this one is on clay. But yeah, what do you think of it?
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that this takes place at the Ljubicic Tennis Academy, which was opened this year, I think. It's called, I think, the Croatians call it the Island of Vitality, and apparently has a very long tennis tradition. So the location has to be amazing. I mean, it's literally on the Adriatic Sea. In the qualies, there were so many alternates, like doubles specialists everywhere. Kade won one match because he played another alternate, but Sadio Dumbia won a match. Fabian Rebel won a match as well. We shall see if they're going to qualify today. The qualies will start in like 1 hour from when we are recording. Filip Misolic could be definitely one of the dangerous player coming from qualies. I actually don't really understand why so many players pull out of challenger qualies lists at the moment. Like in the past 3 or 4 weeks, everyone can get into challenger qualifying, everyone with an ATP ranking. And I have no idea why people keep pulling out. I was looking at the entry list, seeing if Michalski or Čaš can make it, for example, and I don't understand why they, you know, don't just drop. I think Michalski is playing in like, and where's the 15Ks right now, Cairo, and Čaš is playing a series of hardcore 25Ks in Portugal. Hardcore is definitely not his best surface, and you know, just a chance to play challenger quality seems amazing for me, but for whatever reason players don't want to, and they just keep playing, they just keep having, you know, 5 or 6 alternates every single doubles draw, especially as there's just one challenger event in Europe this week. So I really don't know what's going on there. The wildcard for Cornea is a part of the deal that we talked about when Tsitsipas got the chance to play in Sibiu. So it's a bit of a reciprocal wildcard. Why did Sibiu choose, you know, Petros? Why did the tournament in Lausanne choose Petros Tsitsipas? It's absolutely crazy for me, but never mind. But Cornea is here anyway. I have no idea, honestly, what he can bring to the table in singles. Haven't watched him in a while. Jimeno Valero Milojevic could be an interesting first round if Jimeno Valero plays something, I mean, at least remote to what he did earlier in the season. Ajduković Agamenone is the big one, of course. We shall see how much crowd will be there actually in Losil. Maybe they can help Ajduković out because he might need it. Barranco Cosano Taberner is another very high quality first round. As for my pick, I think Cecchinato just seems very sensible. His recent challenger results were quite awful, honestly. He had that good run in San Marino when he lost to Rune, but then in Tulln he lost in the first round, second round in Szczecin, second round somewhere very recently. But the draw is good. I mean, besides Ginard Serdarusic, which could be tricky, he should quite easily make the finals here, honestly. The bottom half just seems a lot more stacked.
Yes, despite that, I am picking somebody from the bottom half. I thought quite hard about Andre Martin. It's just I just couldn't help but really enjoy his section there with how weak the qualifying is. To have all the qualifiers in your section, then a wild card and then Fatih Gerola, I would feel that he has a really good chance of making the semifinals. Yep. But I'm not going for Andre Martin. I'm going for Carlos Taberner. I feel like he's the most talented player in the draw, which is something that I always look for.
Is that bold or not? I mean, I'm thinking if that's bold.
I don't think it's super bold. I mean, I guess that there's younger guys in there who could probably compete for that title of most talented. But I mean, he is like, I would say, on another level still to most of his draw, especially in the section. Baranco Cosano, Gianu, Blancano, Forete, Clark. I feel like he should make the semis and win this whole thing. So yeah, Carlos Tabena, that's who I'm going for here.
Maybe we'll get the final between our picks.
It's possible.
It's certainly not impossible. I was also thinking of Taberner, but you know, as I said, just the bottom half is significantly stronger, so that's why I went with Cecchinato. And we have two South American events this week, which is quite surprising, but I mean, the fields turn out okay, although Buenos Aires is definitely the stronger one, absolutely filled with Argentinians. Where do we go first, Bogota or Buenos Aires?
Yeah, let's go Buenos Aires. Let's enjoy it. Thiago Monteiro is the top seed. He was against Hernán Casanova. As he said, full of Argentinians. This draw just really full. Obviously, it's Casanova, then it's Kiker or Alvarez. We have Tomas Martin Echeverri as the eighth seed. Also, the section plays a qualifier, and then either Tirante or Olivo. Next section, we have Francisco Cerúndolo playing Camilo Hugo Carabelli in the first round, which should be interesting. Then we have the winner plays Ficovic or Sanchez Izquierdo. Then we have six seed Thiago Seyboschwild, given a very easy draw here, as he's on a four-match losing streak. He gets a wild card, Mariano Navone, who's 20 years old, ranked 582 here. Could be interesting to watch. I've not seen him yet. And then faces a qualifier in the second round. In the next section, we have Juan Pablo Varias as the fourth seed, plays Nick Hart, and then has either Fa Rodriguez Taberna or a wild card, Roman Andres Buruchaga. Buruchaga. in the section as well is Sebastian Baez, the seventh seed, playing Pedro Cachin, and then facing Londero or a qualifier. In the final section, we have Juan Manuel Cerúndolo as the second seed, playing Guido Andreozzi, faces the winner of Olivieri or Colarini. Then we have fifth seed Hugo Dalien, who's pretty surprisingly, I feel like he's chosen to play this one. Oh, never mind. No, I mixed up the countries. At first, I can tell that Bogota was in Bolivia. It's not. My bad. unsurprisingly, Hugo Dalien plays Buenos Aires. He faces Facundo Diaz Acosta, and then faces the winner of Meligeni Rodriguez Alves against another wildcard, Juan Bautista Torres. So as you said, loads of Argentinians, very interesting draw. What do you make of it?
In the qualies, we don't really have many players who can, you know, just get on the run here. I believe maybe Carlos Gomez Herrera only, again, a lot of alternates, but here I can understand it because not many Europeans or Americans want to travel to South America and you kind of need to know beforehand. One, do you happen to know what the profession of Buruchaga's father was?
No.
That's one of my favorite fun facts, so I'm just going to give it everywhere. His father scored a goal in the 1986 World Cup final.
I felt like I sort of heard the name before.
Yeah.
When I looked at it, that sounds about right. Yeah, that's amazing.
Argentina against Germany. Argentina won 3-2. That was the year that Maradona had that fantastic event, but didn't actually score a goal in the final. One of these guys was Buruchaga. I can't remember the first name, so never mind. But anyhow, I'm really excited to see him. He won two ITFs in Poland this year, one beating Paweł Ciaś and one I can't even remember, Filip Paliwo maybe. But I might just completely be pulling that out of my ass, but maybe I'm not, which would be kind of funny if he beat Filip Paliwo. Yes, he did beat Filip Paliwo in the other one. Anyhow, I absolutely love the first round between Cerundolo and Ugo Carabelli as well. So many good matches between Argentinians like Tirante Olivo, Andreotti, Juan Manuel Cerundolo. Obviously, Juan Manuel Cerundolo will once again get the chance to break the top 100. I honestly have not much idea what to go for here. I feel like so far these South American events were pretty much us shuffling Baez, Varillas back and forth. Maybe sometimes a Cerundolo pick as well, one of the Cerundolos at least. So I don't know. I mean, Baez, he's just played two very, very long weeks. And that obviously that makes me sort of iffy on picking him. But then again, who else? Monteiro hasn't been playing well. Echeverry had COVID, and I have no idea what physical state he'll be in. Cerundolo has that tough one against Ugo Carabelli, Francisco. Juan Manuel, okay. I mean, I think that's who I'm going to go for. But I'm absolutely not confident in this pick, but I'm going to go with Juan Manuel Cerundolo.
I must sort of echo that sentiment here because I changed my pick as I was reading the draw. I originally had Echeverry, but I just looking at the draw, I was really drawn to Varias's draw. I didn't realize how easy the draw was really.
Baez in the quarters.
But Baez in the quarters is potentially difficult. He did just beat him 2 weeks ago though. In the final there, but of course that was a final. Baez doesn't really like the finals. But it's tough because like every single one I look at, there's like some positives, some negatives. Echeverry I really wanted because Monteiro is kind of struggled, but then you have Tirante and Kiker in the section. So I'm going for early, like two easy rounds here for Varias. Hopefully he gets on a roll and he's just unstoppable. So that's what I'm hoping for here.
So we continue with the Baez and Varias sort of trends that we've had.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just sort of like picking those two guys back and forth. I mixed it up with Francisco Cerundolo. Didn't work for me. I'm definitely going to pick somebody else when we go to Bogota here. Because they're not there. Bogota with top seed Daniel Elahi Galan, who's coming into the tournament in very rough form. He's on a 6 match losing streak since the first qualifying round in Toronto. And some of these have been like rough losses as well. Very easy loss to Eubanks, loss to Goyo. So Galan, I feel like I'm going to stay away from him. Then we have he faces Orlando Luz or Gerald Melzer in the second round. In the section, the other seed is Malek Jaziri, who plays Lucas Catarina, and then either Nicolas Mejia or Christian Rodriguez. Next section, we have Nicolas Jari as the fourth seed, opens against the qualifier, and then possibly another qualifier or a wild card in Juan Sebastian Gomez. The other seed in the section is Ulysses Blanche, the seventh seed. He faces Oriol Rocabataya, and then potentially has Goncalo Oliveira or Peja Krstin. Next section, we have Vít Kopřiva. Third seed plays Alejandro González. Then has either Matheus Puccinelli de Almeida or Alexis Gauthier. Other seed in the section is Jesper de Jong, who's the sixth seed, plays Paul Martin Tifón. And then either Matias Zukas or Roberto Quiroz. And in the final section, we have second seed David Altmaier, who I'm kind of surprised to see here. I wasn't really expecting him here. And he plays Dalibor Svrčina in the first round. Then he has Alexis Galan or Enrique Peña. So I guess a pretty nice early rounds there. And then he has 5th seed Facundo Mena, Alejandro Gomez, and a couple of qualifiers in the section with him. Here, the qualifiers are quite a bit stronger, at least in Enzo Cuaco. He can mix it up for sure. Yaroslav Pospíšil is here, which I'm loving. He's 40 years old now, still around, won the first round. What do you make of this draw?
Yeah, and he's actually playing Bart Stevens, so a double specialist mostly. So maybe there's a chance that that Pospisil gets through. Stevens also defeated Alexander Lazarov in a very weird match where Lazarov committed 16 double faults. But that's not what we're talking about here. Yekwako is going to be the qualifier that everyone fears, even though he's not really in great form. The first round between Gauthier, Puccinelli, D'Almeida is something I'm definitely watching. Schina Altmaier as well. I was sort of expecting Altmaier this year because it seemed, because it's sort of been clear that top 100 is his goal towards the end of the season. So I guess that's the best way to kind of secure it is probably to go to South America for him. It's funny that I wasn't really looking at that before, but Facundo Mena is here, not in Buenos Aires. I guess he's just anti-patriotic. Didn't want to compete in the Argentinian national championships. But my pick, looking at the draw, I have a very clear guy who's simply... I mean, his section is abysmal. There's no other way to put it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all the players involved. I usually don't like using such pejorative words. But I mean, the section is really weak. And I'm going to go with Nicolas Jarry.
Yeah. I mean, like, especially on clay, where Ulysses Blanche isn't going to do the best. It's quite a weak section there. So that's a fair enough pick. I actually forgot that Altmaier was in Lima a couple of weeks ago. So that makes more sense now why he's here. I quite like my guy's section for him. It's Gerald Meltzer that I'm picking here. Opening round, not the easiest against Luz, though he hasn't played in a month since Davis Cup. So we'll see what he has. Galan struggling. Maybe he can sort of try and come back here, but I feel like it's unlikely. Jaziri as a seed at this point. I don't really see him having much effect here. Mejia might be tricky, but I feel like Meltzer within his recent form should be superior. So maybe our guys meet in the semifinals. We'll see. So Hill Meltzer, that's my pick.
Cool. And I guess that's going to be a wrap for us. We're going to see you guys next week. Oh, actually, you're going to hear us. We're probably not going to see each other. But anyhow, that's the kind of weird train of thought that comes to mind when you do these early recordings. So thanks for staying with us till the end. We're gonna meet next Monday or Tuesday or whatever to talk about Bogota, Buenos Aires, and Losin. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
Hope all of you enjoyed another ATP Challenger recap episode from hosts Damian Kust and Jakob Bobro. A huge thank you to them, as always, for taking the time to record these shows. I say it every week, but sincerely, you are not going to find two people who follow the action on the Challenger Tour week in, week out, day in, day out, more closely than Damian and Jakob. And of course, you can read more of Damian's thoughts on our website, crackedrackets.com. I mentioned this at the top. All Indian Wells recap content available on our Mini Break podcast feed. Be on the lookout for some new GSP content this week as well. We're really excited to bring in a new Crack Rackets contributor here this week who's going to help us cover all things related to the women's college tennis season. We're excited to be expanding our college tennis portfolio moving into the 2022 regular season. Have a bunch of fun things planned as we prepare for the regular season to begin. Not quite ready to release all of those, but you'll get a bit of a sneak peek later this week, so be on the lookout for that. And of course, Cracked Interviews podcast, I mentioned at the top, rocking and rolling. We've had so many great guests of late. We're going to try to interview all of the ITA All-American champions. We already spoke with men's singles champion Ben Shelton. I know I'm going to speak with Robbie Cash, Monte Votzel of Ohio State later this week. Hopefully going to speak to the women's champions later this week as well. But again, if any of those interviews are of interest to you, you can find them all on our website, crackrackets.com, or of course over on the Cracked Interviews podcast feed. And as always, I will ask, like, rate, subscribe, review to this show, the Mini Break podcast feed, our Cracked Interviews podcast feed, our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel, so that you don't miss any of our coverage of all things happening across the tennis world. Of course, if you need the more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, we are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at GreatShotPod. A shout out as always to our super producers, Max Ligner and Daniel Westhoff, for the of editing job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. With all of that said, for host Damian Kust and Jakob Bobro, super producers Fligner and Westhoff, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. Hey, great shot. I'll talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Thank you.